That was two transcriptions by Leopold Stokowski, who conducted with the National Philharmonic Orchestra. You heard the Mazurka in B-flat minor, and Perpetual Mobile, that was of Chopin, and Perpetual Mobile by Novacek. As soon as I turn the record over, we'll listen to Humoresque by Tchaikovsky. That was the Humoresque by Tchaikovsky, as performed by Leopold Stokowski, conducting the National Philharmonic Orchestra. I think we'll have time for one more. We'll listen to the Prelude in D minor by Chopin. That was the National Philharmonic Orchestra with the conductor Leopold Stokowski using his own transcriptions of the prelude in D minor by Frédéric Chopin. This has been your host, David Brown, and I'll see you in 3 weeks on the classical program. So stay tuned. There are others that we have during the week. During the weekdays, I believe it's 11 to 2. And next week will be another host bringing you 3 hours of classical music, and I will be with you in 3 weeks. Thank you for listening. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 on your FM stereo dial.
Stardate June 30th. Today, the planet Mars reaches its perihelion, its closest point to the Sun, in 2 years. The planet takes about 2 years, or 687 days, to go once around the Sun. Today, Mars is only about 128 million miles from the Sun, in contrast to about 91 million miles, our closest point to the Sun, every January. It's now nearly summer in the Martian southern hemisphere. That hemisphere's summer solstice, when the sun is highest in the sky as seen from there, takes place in about another month. Perihelion for Mars always takes place around the time of the Martian southern summer. And some interesting things happen around this time. They happen partly because the orbit of Mars is more elliptical than that of Earth. Our orbit is nearly circular, and our distance from the sun doesn't change much over the course of a year. The distance of Mars from the Sun changes more dramatically, so the southern hemisphere summers on Mars, which always come when Mars is closest to the Sun, are always hotter than those in the north. Telescopic observers over the coming months will see the south polar ice cap on Mars shrink to a tiny size, or even disappear entirely. What's more, dust storms often begin on the planet around the time Mars is closest to the Sun. These storms can cover a major part of the planet's surface within a week after they begin. That's the Martian perihelion, Mars' closest point to the Sun in 2 years. Today. For June 30th, that's our program. And for a copy of Stardate magazine, send your name and address and $1 to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, Texas. Zip is 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
Changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Is
say? Nine.
Just hold on a second.
Return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Radio Moscow presents Soviet Mass Media Review. In this edition, the 28th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union and the Party's Future, the Russian Federation's Statehood Restored, Problems of Perestroika, NATO and the Warsaw Treaty Organization through Moscow's eyes. These and other topics. What should one expect of the 28th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union for the party and the nation in general? As the opening day of the Congress draws near, debates on the subject have become particularly sharp. Radio Moscow's programs have featured the leaders of new parties and movements who have been contesting the Communist Party's right to power. Most of the speakers supported the opinion of one of the leaders of the Moscow Popular Front, People's Deputy of the USSR and Deputy Mayor of Moscow, Sergei Stankevich, who said,
Никаких чудес я не жду. Судя по той платформе, с которой на всех парах идет к съезду.
I don't expect any miracles, judging by the platform supported by the Central Committee and most of the delegates to the Congress who have already been elected. There are no chances of renewal, to my deep regret. And yet the Congress will make sense in some respect. At least it will highlight the current lineup of forces and various attitudes, make them clear to the people. In that sense, it will be useful.
The Moscow Young Communist League daily Moskovsky Komsomolets has published an interview with a representative of the so-called Democratic Platform in the CPSU, 28th Congress delegate Vladimir Lysenko. In his answer to one of the questions, Vladimir Lysenko said the following.
The Democratic Platform in the CPSU suggests abandoning communism as the ultimate goal of the party, in favor of bringing about a multi-party, parliamentary, and economically effective state. Supporters of the Democratic Platform must abandon the monopoly of ideology and rely on the treasure of humanistic, democratic, and socialist thought. The bodies of government must be party-free and express the interests of the entire population, and not certain groups. The party must drop the function of placing personnel. The armed forces, the KGB, and the Interior Ministry must be depoliticized. Supporters of the Democratic Platform believe that the Communist Party's monopoly of the mass media must be brought to an end, too.
Analyzing the Democratic Platform in the CPSU, the daily Moskovskaya Pravda says this.
The Democratic Platform in the CPSU seeks to unite the representatives of various groups of the people seeking democratic socialism, and that objective in the current situation looks feasible.
The newspaper also compares the Democratic Platform to the Marxist Platform. The social basis of that platform is more reliable.
It counts on the understanding and support of those people who cannot solve their material and social problems without improving society's life in general. The Marxist platform supporters want a gradual and peaceful transition of power from the hands of bureaucracy into the hands of the alliance of democratic socialist-oriented forces. Comprehensive self-government and the promotion of public movements are the cornerstone of their activity. The Marxist platform doesn't see a place for itself outside the bounds of the democratic aspirations of the public at large.
That position, the paper says, looks more solid than any efforts to preserve the ruling party suggested in the platform of the party's Central Committee.
The Central Committee's platform calling for humane and democratic socialism says that the Communist Party expresses the interests of the working class and all working people. The Central Committee's platform confirms ideological commitment to the dialectic method of Marx, Engels, and Lenin, and strongly rejects dogmatism and intolerance towards other ideas and views. The Communist Party sees its role in contesting the position of the ruling party. As for the emergence of new ideological trends, the party is going to guarantee in its rules the collective work of all bodies of the party, pluralism of opinions, freedom of criticism, and diverse approaches and platforms, as well as referendums in special cases.
Moskovskaya Pravda pointed to the wording of the Central Committee's platform, which in its view is somewhat vague. In part, the newspaper said this.
The Central Committee's platform claims that it expresses the interests of the working class and all working people. However, what will happen to the students, pensioners, and unemployed who will inevitably appear with the establishment of a market economy? Besides, the interests of the working class are so diverse that in many cases they clash with the policy conducted by communists. For instance, the party's Central Committee suggests as a goal a society free from exploitation. But there are workers who want decent wages and an abundance of goods on any terms, including the exploitation of hired labor. It seems unjustified to claim that all workers have identical interests on the sole ground that they all belong to the same class. Besides, the Central Committee, in the paper's view, does not take into account the fact that it is much more complicated, if not hopeless, to try to retain power at any cost in a situation where the communist idea has been discredited than to unite the people on the basis of growing civic conscience.
Philosopher Alexander Tsipko, in an interview to the weekly Moscow News, says that in his view, the Central Committee of the Communist Party must urgently reconsider its platform. Otherwise, there would be no hope for a democratic discussion at the 28th Congress of the party. Speaking at a recent news conference here in Moscow, the chairman of the Supreme Soviet of the USSR, Anatoly Lukyanov, said that the just-ended session of the National Legislature has been the most productive so far. In Lukyanov's view, the first year of the Soviet Parliament in office has made clear a number of things.
Во-первых, он подтвердил, с моей точки зрения, правильность замысла перестройки высших органов.
Firstly, the Supreme Soviet of the USSR confirmed the concept of reforming the highest bodies of state power. Secondly, it made clear that the Congresses of People's Deputies and Supreme Soviet Sessions are bodies of genuine government by the people, capable of tackling the most important issues of the country's life in a democratic manner. Having emerged on the wave of democratic renewal, the Supreme Soviet can work as a day-to-day body of lawmaking and supervision. It has been revealing its great creative potential.
About the first year of parliamentary sessions, Anatoly Lukyanov said that 60 new laws have been passed concerning the economy, social policies, ethnic relations, law and order, democracy, and glasnost.
The law on the press and other mass media endorsed by Parliament drew the attention of journalists. It will come into force on August 1st. Commentaries have pointed to the fact that the new law abolishes censorship and allows any individual or organization to found mass media.
The USSR Supreme Soviet Chairman Anatoly Lukyanov said that the National Parliament, which is in recess for the summer, has a total of 108 various bills in its files. He mentioned a draft union treaty between Soviet republics, as well as bills on the freedom of economic activity and the promotion of enterprise, on the protection of foreign investments in the USSR, on small businesses and on joint ventures as the most important ones. The weekly Argumenti i Fakti named the Congress of People's Deputies of the Russian Federation, the largest Soviet republic in both territory and population, one of the most important events for the future of the Soviet Union.
The weekly said the Congress was dramatic and saw head-on collisions by opposed political forces.
A commentary on Radio Moscow said that the members of different alliances were unanimous on a number of issues.
Take the Declaration on State Sovereignty of Russia. That document will serve as a basis in drafting the Republic's new constitution. The Declaration proclaims supremacy of the Republican Constitution and laws over the Constitution and laws of the USSR. This means that those Soviet laws, that is, national laws, that run counter to the sovereign rights of Russia will not be in effect on its territory.
In his comment on the adoption of the Declaration, Radio Moscow's commentator Yuri Rogachev said this.
Russia is the backbone of the Soviet Union, not only because it accounts for more than half of the country's population, or more than three-fourths of the Union's resources of raw materials, fuel, timber, land, and water. All of the Soviet Union is associated with Russia. Currently, the word center is often used in reference to Russia, and dictating by the center is associated with dictating by Russia. However, Russia itself has for years been subordinate to dictating by the Union government and had control of a very small share of its tremendous riches. Russia suffered from the centralized bureaucratic system more than any other republic. For many years, it played the role of a donor, supplying other republics with raw materials and fuel at low prices, receiving manufactured goods at overcharged prices. Russia was the main contributor to the national budget, which, then was redistributed in favor of other republics. As a result, Russia, which before was ahead of other regions in terms of social and economic development, has now fallen behind.
The adopted Declaration on State Sovereignty has laid the groundwork for solving Russia's problems in the context of full economic and political independence. As a matter of fact, all Soviet republics seek such independence. Yuri Rogachev comments that a sovereign Russia will be able to perform its consolidating role much better. It will be able to guarantee a genuine voluntary union of equal republics. You're listening to Soviet Mass Media Review, prepared by Radio Moscow. Some Western mass media have been claiming that the Warsaw Treaty Organization has been falling apart. The Pentagon chief, Richard Cheney, said in a recent interview on the CNN television that the Warsaw Treaty is passing away. Is this so? The Soviet news agency TASS political observer Yuri Kornilov believes no. These are his counter-arguments.
At the recent Moscow conference of the Political Consultative Committee of the Warsaw Treaty Organization, the leaders of all seven countries affiliated to it called for preserving that organization. The idea was emphasized that the Warsaw Treaty, reformed in keeping with today's requirements, will be able to cope with the mission of promoting disarmament and a pan-European system of security.
The newspaper Rabochaya Tribuna has said it is changing fundamentally. It believes that the Warsaw Treaty Organization has been becoming a more political than military organization. The 16 member countries of NATO extended a hand of friendship and cooperation to the Warsaw Treaty from Turnberry. However, that is not a reason for triumph, People's Deputy of the USSR and Secretary of the Communist Party's Central Committee, Oleg Bakhlanov, told the newspaper. This is how he explains his skeptical attitude to NATO's statements.
We have heard quite a few speeches in Scotland where NATO's session was held. However, we did not hear any specific proposals for disarmament or all European security. Fine statements were addressed to Moscow on many occasions before. We were encouraged to take unilateral steps in terms of disarming ourselves and reducing the strength of our troops. Meanwhile, those who made such calls kept strengthening their military alliance in every way and stuck to their old-time doctrines and foreign policies. In that connection, I'd like to point out that in the Soviet Union, there are people who believe that if we disarm unilaterally, NATO, astonished by this fact, would disband itself. But that is a great mistake. No one in NATO has so far abandoned the idea of a forward defense, nuclear arms modernization, or military build-up by including a united Germany in the alliance. Let me remind you that while the Soviet Union has been pulling its troops out of Central Europe, NATO has remained there and been getting stronger. An imbalance is emerging.
The newspaper recalled Mikhail Gorbachev's recent statement in favor of considering what's going to be done to the Vienna disarmament process. Should it go on, and if yes, should its principles remain the same or be changed? Oleg Bakhlanov believes that it is quite reasonable to put such a question. The chief of the Soviet Foreign Ministry's information service, Gennady Gerasimov, in the newspaper Sovetskaya Kultura, however, made this statement.
In the resolution adopted by the session of the NATO Council, one can easily find old ideas and approaches alongside new ones. But it would be naive to expect any embracing. An extended hand is already a great change. As the two blocs which split Europe before get together and transform, can help resolve the complicated German issue. Let's hope that it will bring about an all-European structure of security and stability.
You've been listening to Soviet Mass Media Review, prepared at the studios of Radio Moscow.
Certainly is a stirring piece, isn't it? And that's Billy Bragg performing the Internationale. Yes. Where is that thing? Where is that CD? Ah, here it is. Thank you. Yes, off his newest record, title track, in fact, off his newest record, and many other songs. I dreamed I saw Phil Oakes last night. I think that's really funny. The marching songs of the covert battalions, Blake's Jerusalem, Nicaragua, Nicaraguita, the red flag, and my youngest son came home today. I think what I'd like to do here, before we get into the program today, is just play one more song from this album, a short song, because this is, well, we've had this a few days now, and it's very enlightening, very inspiring, and just a lot of fun to listen to. So let's listen to I Dreamed I Saw Phil Oakes last night here on Brain Damage on WUSB.
I dreamed I saw Phil Oakes last night, alive as you and me. Says I to Phil, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. The music business killed you, Phil. They ignored the things you said and cast you out when fashions change, says Phil. But I ain't dead, says Phil, but I ain't dead. The FBI harassed you, Phil. They smeared you with their lies, says he, but they could never kill what they could not compromise. I never compromised. Though fashions changed and critics sneered, the songs that I have sung are just as true tonight as then. The struggle carries on. The struggle carries on. When the song of freedom rings out loud from valleys and from hills, where people stand up for their rights, Phil Oakes is with us still. Phil Oakes inspires us still.
All right, that's enough, Billy Bragg. I dreamed I saw Phil Oakes last night, and yes, that is a really good song, I think. Good records. You know, it's nice to see stuff like this coming out. Things with people thinking, things with lyrics. Phil Oakes, of course, being a folk singer from the 1960s, and he sang about issues, too. He sang about freedom, he sang about oppression, all that kind of stuff. And it's sad that not many people know who he was. When he died in 1976, his FBI file was 410 pages long. And America has yet to produce another songwriter like him. Well, enough of that. 10:34, the program is Brain Damage. This is Eric Corley. And the program is a call-in show. You're invited to give us a call at 632-6901, area code 516. What's happening in the world? Well, I brought in some things hot off the teletype, and check this out. The following is a release by the United States Geological Survey. Not that, but it's kind of closest to what I'm about to talk about. National Earthquake Information Center. A minor earthquake occurred in central California near Alum Rock, northeast of San Jose, at 6:37 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. That's weird, because they were on Pacific Daylight Time, so it was 5:37 p.m. where it counts, out in San Jose. And it was on June 30th, the day that this still is, I believe. The magnitude was computed at 3.8 on the Richter scale. The quake was recorded by the U.S. Geological Survey at Golden, Colorado. It will be rebroadcast at midnight. The earthquake was felt in the Fremont-Hayward area and north to Marin County. There have been no reports of damage. So for all listeners out there, that's the latest on that situation. And this bulletin, just in, severe thunderstorms, let's try that again. I always panic when the weather gets bad. Severe thunderstorm warnings for Broome, Shenango, and Tioga counties are no longer in effect. So for all you listeners in Broome, Shenango, and Tioga counties, the severe thunderstorm warnings are no longer in effect. You can go back into your houses now. However, if you're in Delaware County, a severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 10:30. It being 10:36 now, I suppose that's probably finished as well, but I am not authorized to say that. A band of marauding thunderstorms with torrential rain and gusty winds were from 10 miles east of Deposit in eastern Broome County to New Albany and Blackwell in northern Pennsylvania. The Wolfpack, as many people have called the storms, was moving southeast at 45 miles an hour and should exit Delaware County by 10:30 p.m. Another storm with brief, very heavy rain was north of Bath in Steuben County. Other showers and thunderstorms were just west of Dansville, south of Newburgh in New York, near Newark, New Jersey, and 15 miles southeast of State College. All the showers and thunderstorms were moving southeast at 45 miles an hour. If threatening weather approaches, seek shelter quickly. The severe thunderstorm watch is no longer in effect for the central southern tier counties of New York, but remains in effect until midnight for the Catskills and Susquehanna regions. And a bit closer to home, a large part of central and northeast Montana, effective this Saturday, has a severe thunderstorm watch, effective this Saturday night and Sunday morning until 2 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time. Large hail, dangerous lightning, and damaging thunderstorm winds are possible in these areas. The severe thunderstorm watch area is along and... This doesn't make any sense, but I'll read it anyway. Is a long and 90 statute miles north and south of a line from 45 miles north of Lewistown, Montana, to 10 miles southeast of Sydney, Montana. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. And you don't need a college degree to figure that out, but I figured I'd mention it anyway. Persons in these areas should be on the lookout for threatening weather conditions and listen for later statements and possible rumors. Right, okay. That is the story. You may wonder why I just read all the weather for upstate New York and Montana. It was my rather strained way of making a point. I can't find the local weather. I don't know what's going to happen around here. Look out the window. It looks kind of threatening, doesn't it? Lightning occasionally, and looks like it might rain. So if you know the weather in your area, please call us and tell us, because, well, we have no idea what's going on. Okay, but what's going on in the rest of the world? It's an exciting day, folks. Today is it's June 30th here, but it's July 1st in many other places. And July 1st, well, it may look like New Year's Eve in East Berlin tonight, but it's actually the dawn of a new economic era. At midnight Berlin time, East Germans rang in their new currency, the West German Mark. It's a major step towards the full reunification of the two Germanies. East Germans marked the occasion with fireworks, toasts, and a long line at a bank that opened at midnight. And bank officials say they'll have special Sunday hours. The long queues are for East Germans anxious to exchange their now worthless communist currency for the West German variety. By the way, I'm getting a whole pile of that currency. A friend of mine is coming back from Berlin, and he said he got all this money for me. It's going to be great. I'll bet it'll be worth something around here. I'll bet I'll be able to trade it for many nice things. Anyway, authorities have agreed that East Germans can trade marks on a one-to-one basis for personal savings up to about $3,600. So that's the news from Europe. Very exciting day today, very historic occasion. And something well worth keeping our eye on, because things are changing rapidly. Things are changing here, too, by the way. In Canada, there's talk of secession. There's talk of secession from both Quebec and British Columbia. It's incredible. And Newfoundland. Can you imagine that? Newfoundland becoming a country in of its own? Craziness. So the world is a changing place. Now, my usual trip through the newspapers, I found the usual assortment of censorship items and crackdowns on the First Amendment, that kind of thing. Very quickly, what's going on? How about this one to start with? The director of an abortion clinic in Corpus Christi, Texas, said yesterday that she had been excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church by her bishop, becoming the first American Catholic to receive a decree of excommunication for abortion activities. Rachel Varguez, director of the Reproductive Services Clinic, said she received the decree from Corpus Christi Bishop Rene H. Gracida on June 1st. It forbids her from receiving the sacraments of the church, from holding church office, and from receiving a Christian burial until she ceases her work at the clinic and repents. I'd like to know, does that come in a form letter? You've officially been excommunicated, or do they write a personal letter? I'm going to give her a call and see if she'll send me a copy of that. Is that machine behaving? Now release it. Release it. Okay, it works. Beautiful. That's how things work around here, folks. But okay, they do work in the end. All right. Arts agency. Too bad we didn't record that. That would have been fun. Our arts agency denies four grants recommended by peer panel. The National Endowment for the Arts today rejected four of 18 grants recommended by the agency's theater peer panel. Each of the four who were denied grants is a performance artist whose act includes strong sexual content, and each had received grants in the past. The unusual action came 2 days after John E. Frohnmeyer, the endowment chairman, informed a dozen arts professionals in a meeting in Seattle that political realities made it likely he would have to veto some grants recommended by the endowment's peer panels. The endowment has been under growing criticism for the last year from right-wing religious groups and conservative politicians not to make grants for art that some might consider obscene. Congress is scheduled to begin debate next month on whether to continue funding for the endowment and whether to place restrictions on the type of art that can be financed with public money. The four performance artists refused the grants are Karen Finley, Holly Hughes, John Fleck, and Tim Miller. Miss Finley, a performance artist who at times performs partly nude, was singled out by endowment critics as an example of the endowment's willingness to support work that might be considered obscene. And Holly Hughes, a New York performance artist who describes her work as that of storytelling, said by telephone yesterday, "The irony is that I've been funded twice in the past year by NEA, once for the same work in a different category, a 1990 playwriting fellowship. I think the reason my work was overturned is because it is chock full of good old feminist satire, and secondly, I am openly lesbian. My work is not obscene. I talk graphically about body parts, and there is reference to sexual stuff, but it is very humorous. I think Chairman Frohnmeyer is bowing to political pressure from the far-right minority, the prejudice and hatred that used to be directed to people of color. The scapegoat today are gay people and feminists." And I don't think there's any question that this guy is bowing to political pressure. Didn't he even say? Let's go back to the beginning of this article. Yes, he informed a dozen arts professionals in a meeting in Seattle that political realities made it likely he would have to veto the grants. So political realities is another way of saying that you're bowing into political pressure. So that's what's happening in the art world. All right, so we got abortion, we got art. Now let's go to newspapers. A local television reporter in San Antonio has been jailed and faces the prospect of months behind bars for refusing to reveal the names of three people who helped him get an interview with a jailed murder suspect. The reporter, Brian Karim of KMOL-TV, appears to be the first journalist in more than a decade to face prolonged imprisonment over the issue of confidentiality. First Amendment experts said the case could eventually redefine the rights and privileges of journalists by prompting the first major review of the subject by the Supreme Court in almost 20 years. And that, folks, is scary. On Wednesday, Mr. Karim began serving a 6-month sentence for contempt of court after exhausting his appeals in the state courts and failing to win an emergency reprieve from a United States Supreme Court justice. Mr. Karim, 29 years old, has refused to identify the people who helped him arrange a telephone interview during which the chief suspect in the killing of a policeman said he shot the officer. If First Amendment privileges cannot be asserted in this case, then they can't be asserted in any case because Brian's case does not fall into a gray area. Those are the words of R. Lawrence Macon, a lawyer who represents Mr. Karim and his television station. The question of whether a journalist can protect the identity of a news source in a criminal proceeding by citing the First Amendment is itself a gray area. The chief Supreme Court decision on the subject, the 1972 ruling in Brandsburg versus Hayes, stated that reporters did not have a fundamental right to avoid testimony in criminal cases to protect their journalistic privileges. So the whole thing could be up for a more specific opinion. Interviewed by telephone at the Bexar County Jail, Mr. Karim spoke of his dilemma in personal terms. He spoke of how much he misses his 18-month-old son, but he added, I made a promise to someone, and I am not in the habit of breaking promises. But he has also taken a combative stand on the larger issues. This case jeopardizes the First Amendment, he said. It could make reporters into instruments of law enforcement, and that's wrong. Despite what you see on TV, folks, despite the reporters, America's Most Wanted, Inside Edition, all that other crap that's on the air, reporters are reporters, and they should stay that way, right? In England, amid growing public criticism of the press, the government has warned that Britain's newspapers must curb excesses or face tough regulation. Home Secretary David Waddington gave the industry 1 year to set up a commission to guard against invasions of privacy and other excesses after a government-sponsored committee recently issued recommendations widely viewed as giving newspapers one last chance to better regulate themselves. The reaction of editors and publishers was mixed, with some voicing concern that the proposals would threaten freedom of the press and others suggesting that the main violators would not heed the warnings. Still, others agreed that the industry has behaved badly and needed disciplining. Now, England has no guarantees of freedom of expression like the First Amendment, and the proposals come at a time when the government has been tightening restrictions. And Margaret Thatcher, don't forget that, folks. The British public has increasingly complained about the publication of untrue or sensationalist articles in the press, as well as gross intrusions into private lives. It was after a series of successful libel actions against national newspapers that the editors of 20, in a move, I guess 20 is a magazine over there, in a move to head off government controls on reporting, agreed last year to an ethics code and a system to deal with complaints. But the Calcutta Committee, whose declared basic position was that freedom of expression should generally override protection of privacy, said that such reforms had not gone far enough. The Association of British Editors, which represents editors from national and regional newspapers, magazines, news agencies, and television and radio, said the recommendations represented another turn of the screw against the free workings of the press in Britain. It's sad because it's all those sensationalist papers. Imagine the New York Times being hindered because of the idiocy of the National Enquirer. You know, it's not the same thing. And one is a lot more important than the other. But we have one more, no, two more actually. A photograph of a nude father and son is pornographic, say federal officials who seize the print and want to destroy it, even though it has been widely exhibited and published as a work of art. It's not an obscene photograph, not even close, said Robert E. Mattel, a Portland, Maine lawyer who was fighting to get the picture by photographer Walter Chappell out of the hands of authorities. U.S. Attorney Richard S. Cohen has a different view of the black-and-white print called Father and Son, which was taken in the early 1960s and shows Chappell in the nude as he holds his infant son. Boy, talk about pornography there, right? Yeah, I'm not an artist, Cohen said yesterday. I'm generally very liberal in these things, but I do personally find it quite offensive. The signed picture of Chappell, who lives in El Rito, New Mexico, was seized this winter by U.S. customs officials at the Canadian border crossing in Houlton. Two friends of the owner, Brigitte Lenderink, were trying to take the picture from Lenderink's old home in Canada to her current home at a meditation center in Vermont. Mattel would not say where his client lives because she does not want to be contacted by reporters. But can you imagine that? Can you imagine having your things gone through and somebody finds a photograph and says, no, you're not allowed to take that into this country? Oh, boy, it's incredible. And the only bit of good news, I think. The French National Assembly in Paris approved a new anti-racism measure yesterday, widely believed to be aimed at Jean-Marie Le Pen and his far-right National Front Party. Under the bill, passed by a 308-265 vote, anyone convicted of practicing or promoting racial discrimination could be barred from holding any elected office or government job for 5 years. The bill now goes to the Senate. The governing socialists have blamed Le Pen and his colleagues for creating a climate of racial animosity. Le Pen advocates deporting North African immigrants and once called the Nazi gas chambers a detail of history. And that, my friends, is what's happening this week, this day in the world.
And scary things, you know. Every week we sort of monitor the progress of clampdowns on freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of thought. Every week, unfortunately, there seems to be more and more to talk about. Well, our number is 632-6901, area code 516. We are going to have a special guest come in a little while. And we have the tripods, of course, coming up at 11. But right now, we'd like to hear from you, see what's on your mind, see if you have any feedback to what you've been listening to. And again, 632-6901, area code 516. The program is Brain Damage, and we're on until midnight. That's it, yes. Good evening.
Hello there. There will be no...
You're going to have to speak up, sir. You're going to have to speak up.
There will be no nudity. There will be no sex.
Hold on. I'm getting a buzz here.
There will only be sex in missionary position only. No more.
That's better.
What's going on over there?
The usual.
Well, I was being censored because I mentioned a three-letter word.
No, but could you repeat all that, please?
Repeat it?
Yeah, I heard you very, very dimly in my headphones, but...
Well, there'll be no sex, and there'll be no nudity in this country. And if you're going to have sex, there'll be no pleasure, and it will be done missionary position only.
Okay, that sounds fair enough. And who are you to tell us this, sir?
Well, this is the church speaking through the doomsayer.
Why is the church always the one telling us about sex? You know, that's what I don't understand, you know? I mean, who made them the experts?
I don't know. But I just got rid of them. They are not tuned into my mind anymore.
You got politicians telling you about art. You got church people telling you about sex. You know, I mean, where's the people that really know about this stuff? It's time for everybody to stand up and say something because it's going to be too late real soon.
Yeah, well, it already is too late. I mean, hey, man, how come you always screw up the show with tripods?
What do you mean, screw up the show with tripods? You know, that little statement there could get you in a lot of trouble in certain parts of the country.
I thought so.
That's right. Tripods are an essential part of Long Island heritage.
Well, that used to be on WLIW, the whole thing, from beginning to end.
Not that, tripods. That is a science fiction ripoff of this series here.
Was?
Yeah.
I should be shot.
It didn't work out very well. Well, you shouldn't be shot, but you should be reprimanded quite a bit.
I think the economy on Long Island is slowing down.
Well, that's a very a very good point there. You don't really have to look very hard to see that. But where do you see it?
Well, my friend got laid off after 10.5 years with his company. That's a long time.
Uh-huh.
And he's an engineer.
Is it a big company?
Oh, yeah, it's Harris Corporation.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that going around. There's a lot of things going out of business.
Well, I would like to know... Think about this. Maybe you can answer it later on. Where is the money coming from on Long Island? Like, let's say you have an island here, right?
Uh-huh.
And you got to have money here to spend.
Uh-huh.
Now, we buy a lot of things that aren't made here. We buy gas. We buy oil. We buy a lot of things that are made in Taiwan and China and everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But what are we making? It seems like, is it possible that too much of the money is going out and nothing's coming in? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, what do we make? We just seem to be, you know, trying to build things. And it seems that when things are going out of business at such a high rate, why do we keep building and expanding when obviously it's not working?
Building what? You mean the office complexes?
Yeah, I mean, why do we need another strip shopping center on Jericho Turnpike, you know, when the economy is falling apart and when we can't find tenants to fill the ones that exist? What's the point? You know, somebody is taking advantage of the situation. Obviously, they're making money, but it's a first-generation thing. The second generation isn't going to make anything, and the third generation probably is going to fail completely.
That's all speculation. That's all business speculation.
Well, I mean, I don't know anything about business, but you can tell that by looking at what's going on around. You know, you see things, you see shops being boarded up, you see things going out of business that have been there a long time.
Really? Out where you are at Setauket?
The whole area, sure.
Like, for instance?
For instance? Okay, I went to a camera store in Center Reach yesterday that had been there for a long time. Center Reach Mall has a thing on the door, bankruptcy court, okay? The Arby's right around here, that went out of business.
Arby's
went out, well, not the whole chain, but one of them did.
That's like American Pie.
It sure is. Purple Plum across the street from the university, out of business.
No kidding.
Go to any shopping center. Go to any shopping center, and you'll see stores, empty stores, stores that are boarded up, you know?
I think there's too much money going off the island and not enough money coming in, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, I don't think you can, you know, I think it's a problem in planning. I don't think you can blame people outside of the island for, you know, for doing what we're not doing right. But we spend too much time thinking about how to make an immediate profit, about how to, you know, build something on this land and sell the land and make money that way, instead of developing, you know, developing our way of doing things and building up, you know, building up from the base.
I like what Halpin's doing. You know, all the purchasing for the groundwater and species.
That's a very important thing. You know, that's something that's going to benefit not only this generation, but all the generations to come.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say, oh, you know, we don't have the money and, you know, we can't do it at this time. But, folks, you don't do it now, you'll never do it, and you're really going to be screwed later when you don't have any drinking water or you don't have any trees or things like that. You've got to look at the bigger picture, and that's what people all over the world have been able to do. I mean, people in other continents have been doing this a lot longer than we have, and, you know, they're able to think of the future. We seem to think too much of the immediate future.
You're telling me. Hey, wait a minute. Before we go, you've been talking about the censorship.
Yeah.
I should have covered that. I got another letter going in Newsday. I can't believe they're going to print it because I sort of spoke out against one of M.G. Lord's articles, but I didn't bring up the censorship thing. I don't know if you watched it. You probably didn't. I don't know if you were interested in that. Did you watch the whole Ring of the Nibelung? The Wagner on Channel 13.
Well,
17
yeah,
hour long.
I couldn't sit through, 15 hours of opera?
I happen to enjoy that.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. I think those kind of things should happen a lot, but
yeah.
I just, you know, I can't sit through 15 hours of opera. That's just something
I loved
have to
it.
Say.
I couldn't get enough of that opera myself. I really loved it. But they're going to print my letter, but I should have mentioned censorship, because if you want to talk about obscene material, that opera had, if you would have read Marvin Kittman's article last week, he pointed it all out, because I thought, that thing is full of incest and all kinds of things like that.
Well, you know, anything that's about life is going to be filled with things that some might find obscene.
That was, you know, it's just done in a different way. It's not blatant.
Now, are you going to have, you know, are you going to have an honest portrayal of life? Are you going to have something like, what are some of those sitcoms from the 1950s? Bachelor Father and,
What
are those other ones? Come on, help me out.
Donna Reed,
yeah. I mean, come on. Are you going to have that kind of unrealistic view of life?
Goldie Gillis.
Or are you going to try to tackle some real issues and have something people can identify with?
Yeah, this opera is fantastic, but it has a lot of things. I mean, there are even drinking blood, there's thievery, all kinds of, you know, violence. But, of course, it's done in a different taste. It's not as blatant, but still, I could see, you know, like Two Crew Live got picked on pretty bad, I think.
Two Live Crew,
or whatever. But nobody's picking on this opera, and nobody's picking on Frank Zappa, who wrote Joe's Garage Part 2. And if you ever listen to that album, that's could be considered obscene.
That came out when it was still okay to put out records that occasionally had four-letter words in them.
Yeah,
you know, now it's very dangerous to do that.
Yeah, but there's more than four-letter words in that album. They're talking about having sex with machines, vacuum cleaner, things like that.
Well, I mean, you know, unless the vacuum cleaner isn't a willing participant, I don't see the problem.
But they're not taking Zappa's album off the shelves, as far as I know. That album could be considered pornographic. I happen to like the album. I think it's a good album. I think he's a great musician, but I could see where they could definitely pick on this compared to Two Crew. This is much more blatant than probably Two Crew Live is. I mean, sex with machines is in there. I mean, you don't have to read between the lines. He spells it out.
Spells it out, huh?
He's white. I think this is a black issue. I think they're picking on the blacks.
Well, yeah, I don't doubt that at all, because you know, it's a lot harder to defend yourself if you're black. It's a fact in this country.
And that's why they don't pick on other groups, but they will. I mean, if you think you're safe because you're not a black artist, those performance artists, they're not black. I mean, some are, but they're not all black.
What's your personal feeling before you go about this True Life Crew thing?
Well, I've already talked about that. Basically, I don't see what the problem is. We've always had a certain standard on the radio. We don't play music with, obscene lyrics on the air. But if people want to buy that kind of thing, more power to them. They should have the right to.
That's a shame.
I don't see the problem.
WBAI is a little bit more liberal than this station when it comes to things like that, unfortunately.
Unfortunate that they're liberal, or unfortunately that they're more liberal?
I'm very uptight about playing some Zappa songs and stuff like that. I kind of turns me off, but I guess you have a reason for it.
We're uptight about playing Zappa songs?
Does it have any obscenity in it? We don't want to do that. You know, you guys, you know.
You go in the back and get a Zappa song, please. What do you want to hear? Tell me what you want to hear.
Well, I like one. I wouldn't mind hearing one of those clean ones. It can't happen here. I always like that.
I'll take your word for it. It can't happen here, huh?
Yeah, that's the one on Mothers of Invention. I think that's his first album.
Well, I don't know if we have that, but, I mean, we'll go. You guys know Zappa at all? Go get something from Frank Zappa. Anything. We'll just throw it on. We don't care. I mean, we care.
Now, you know that you're not going to play any Zappa with any explicit lyrics in it, Eric.
No, but to say we're not going to play Zappa because it might have explicit lyrics is a completely different thing.
Every time I request a Zappa song, the DJ says, wait a minute, does it have any, is it a clean record?
I think they're just afraid of Zappa, you know? I don't know if it's that, but, and your point has been taken, and we'll certainly, look at that kind of thing. It's good you bring this up, because is Zappa being victimized because he does some stuff that could be considered offensive? That's a very valid point. That's precisely the point we've been trying to make here, because, if somebody is banned because they have the potential to be offensive, I mean, that's as bad as you can possibly get.
He's a great musician. He composes some pretty complex tunes. I'm not going to say that Two Live Crew or whatever is. I don't think it's comparable, but I don't know. I never really listened to it, but I know that Zappa's music is complex. Maybe the censors have taken that into consideration. I don't know. But it smells of black and white to me.
Uh huh.
So do you think maybe it is time to draw a line? I don't know. Maybe this is bad. Maybe this is socially demeaning. This Two Crew Live.
Two Live Crew.
Or whatever.
Maybe
it is. Maybe it is bad for society.
Well, let society decide that on an individual basis. Isn't that what it's supposed to be about?
I agree. Just like I'm a veteran and I don't believe in flag burning, but I don't believe in making it a law against it.
Right. There seems to be a lot of people want to tell other people how to live their lives, and it's just, that's always a scary thing.
Hey, you got to put the tripods on. I'm holding you up.
Okay, the tripods are running late, and we do want to get some more phone calls. Thanks so much for calling. We're going to fade out of this with a few minutes of Zappa, and then thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Hey, yeah.
All right?
Bye now.
See ya. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516, and I'm told this is a clean song, so let's hear a couple of seconds of it, then we'll go into the tripods, and we'll come right back, and we've got a special guest and all kinds of other fun.
Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the exciting adventures of the Tripod family. Join us as we follow one of America's most illustrious families as they search for happiness and security in the suburbs of Long Island. This week we find the tripod family in the kitchen of their Long Island home, and we hear Kathy.
Would anybody like some chicken frankfurters for lunch? I have about 7 pounds of the things in the refrigerator.
I don't know if I've ever had any of those. I am invited, aren't I?
Oh, of course you are, Charlie. You're practically one of the family.
Well, thanks. How about you, Mr. Tripod? Are you going to have some of Kathy's chicken frankfurters?
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, how in blazes could a frankfurter be made out of chicken? I mean, it wouldn't be a frankfurter anymore if you did that, you know?
Well, the way I understand it...
Well, let me explain it to him, Charlie.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. You see, Pop, there are these two kinds of frankfurters. There's the all-beef kind first, and then...
Then there are chicken frankfurters.
Exactly.
It's pretty simple, Mr. Tripod.
No, wait a minute. I always thought hot dogs came from pigs, just like bacon. I mean, you've heard of pigs in a blanket when you roll them up with dough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how in the name of Toledo could you go around calling something that's made out of a pig all beef?
He's got a point there, Kathy. I always thought hot dogs came from pigs, too.
Well, maybe some of them do, but the ones I was talking about were all beef.
So that means there are three kinds.
I guess so, Charlie, but it really isn't that important, is it?
Well, it is if you're eating frankfurters. I mean, don't you want to know what you're eating?
I always wanted to know why they call the stupid things hot dogs in the first place.
Yeah, that's
I mean, they don't have dogs in them, do they?
No, they don't, and they don't even look like dogs either.
Let me get that. My stars! I should have just made hamburgers.
I didn't tell Kathy this because I thought she might get upset, Mr. Tripod.
What's that, Charlie?
Well, my aunt over in Paducah, Kentucky, told me they have turkey frankfurters down there.
Turkey? You don't say.
Don't tell that to Kathy. I think she might flip her lid or something.
Uncle Jonathan!
Uh-oh, here comes trouble.
What are you doing here, Uncle Jonathan? Aren't you helping the Coast Guard search the Atlantic for Howard?
Well, that's what I came over here to talk with you folks about.
Hey, I don't like the sound of this. What's going on?
Okay, I'll tell you this as openly and honestly as I can. I don't think Howard's lost in a canoe somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean. I don't think he ever was, for that matter.
But Uncle, how can you say that? You just told us yourself that Howard was last seen getting into a canoe on Whitney Island.
That's right, I did say that, and that's what happened. But I don't think he got lost. I believe he knew exactly where he was going.
Where in tarnation could he go? I mean, there's nothing around that blasted island for hundreds of miles.
Very true, Mr. Tripod, very true. But supposing he had arranged to meet somebody out there, someone else who was supposed to come to Whitney Island that day.
But who else was supposed to come to Whitney Island that day?
Do you remember a certain French actress that was supposed to co-star with Howard in the film I was making? I keep forgetting her name.
A
French name. French, a French actress.
She was in Playboy magazine last
year. I've worked with her all the time. I should remember the name. I don't know why I can't do that. I heard it just yesterday. I keep forgetting.
Something about a tunnel or a...
Bridge something.
Brigitte,
that's it. Brigitte, LaRue.
Hey.
Very good, Kathy, very good.
Oh, thank you. I kind of figured,
That's it, all right.
Yeah, and Howard.
Huh?
Wait a minute. Howard's out there with him? Her?
Well, she never did show up for a part that day, and I can't seem to get a hold of her.
Oh, you mean Howard's a two-timer?
Oh, my gosh. I never figured Howard to be that kind of a person.
Yes, I must admit it. I didn't think he had that much in him.
Well, if this is true, what are you folks going to do? Call off the search or just wait and see?
So that's what 7 years of marriage leads to. I should have known better. That slimy two-timer.
Wait a minute, Kathy. This hasn't been proven yet.
It's only Uncle Jonathan's conjunction.
Right, and besides... conjecture, you mean. Besides all that, we have Howard's character to look at. Now, you folks have known Howard a lot longer than I have, and he wouldn't just up and take off at some cheap French actress, now would he? Well, would he?
You want to stay and have some chicken frankfurters with us, Uncle Jonathan?
Chicken frankfurters, huh? I must admit, it's been a long time since
Charlie.
I've had some...
Charlie, do you know of any good lawyers around here?
Well, that depends, Kathy. There are so many different kinds. There's property, financing, corporate,
Charlie,
criminal.
I'm looking for a divorce lawyer.
And so the Tripods begin to hear some things about Howard that they never thought they'd hear. What will come of it? Are they being too hasty? And what about Brigitte LaRue? You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Charlie say,
"Those aren't chicken frankfurters."
That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Think it's obscene. Doesn't sound obscene to me. I mean, it could be kind of immoral, but I don't think it's obscene. Frank Zappa here on 90.1 FM, Brain Damage. I was preceded by latest exciting adventure of the tripods. Who knows what will happen next? It's 14 minutes after 11. Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. The program is Brain Damage, and we're on until midnight. And we have Paul here. And
hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Vacation, so must be fine.
Where are you from?
Holland.
You're from Holland, and you're here now.
That's correct.
Well, that's...
You're from America, and you're here, too.
That's true. Well, Paul is here. Paul is visiting from Holland, and it's my duty right now to show Paul this country, or this part of the country. And I'll tell you, over the last few days, we've been sort of going all over the place, wandering around New York City, Long Island, various things like that, and it's fun. It's you learn a lot yourself when you show people this place.
Car break-in, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, you know, we went to New York City, and I even arranged to have my car broken into to show Paul how New York really works. And you know, it's I'm trying to give you a well-rounded picture of the whole thing. Right?
I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it's fun. So you're in the States for what, a month or so?
3.5 weeks.
3.5 weeks. And you've been here before, right?
2 years ago, yes.
Yeah?
New York. But more than New York.
So how do people in Holland think of the United States? What do you think of the United States?
What do I think?
Yeah. First impressions or second impressions?
Second impressions. Well, rich, poor. It's how do you call?
Divided?
One extreme and the other extreme.
Uh-huh.
And You don't see that here in the over there in the Netherlands where I live, not that extreme. Of course, you have rich people, you have people not that rich, but you don't see people walking just living on the streets.
Uh-huh.
And well, that was something which impressed me in New York.
Yeah, well, in New York, we were walking around the streets there, and you know, a lot of people live on the streets, and we also noticed New York is really a filthy place, garbage everywhere. And you sort of get used to it, you know. But when you're showing it to someone that's not used to it, you realize, hey, this is kind of strange, I guess. When you've been to other parts of the world yourself, you know, you say New York is really the exception. And I wonder why, you know. How do you think this has happened?
I think a lot of people just very crowded on one spot.
Uh-huh.
And everyone, well, America pretends to be the big country. You can make it. There's a lot of money, so... A lot
yeah.
of people go there, and but also maybe just the high buildings. There are a lot of people, and the people who can't be in the buildings
right.
have to be down the buildings, and it's not that widespread. The people all come together.
Now, your country is probably one of the most densely populated countries in the world.
Yeah.
Holland. How many people live there?
50 million, something like that.
50 million people, and it's no bigger than New York State?
New York State, something like it, yeah.
It's I don't have the exact figures here, but it's an incredibly small place for so many people. Now, how is it that going through Holland, you seem to have so much more open space than going through Long Island? You know, what do you guys do differently?
Well, we have less wood. My first impression here was, well, quite a lot of trees and stuff like that. And I don't know what part you've seen of the Netherlands, but all the cities are stick together, and there's just few green in between the cities.
Mm-hmm.
We have only one green spot, and it's the Veluwe, and well, that's not that big at all.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems, you know, like there's just not as much development like we have here. I mean, every few feet there's a new shopping center, there's new housing going up, and a lot of it doesn't seem to even be, you know, needed. And it's kind of strange, you know. We have a lot of problems with that here as people opposed to it. Europe, however, has been around much longer than we've been around here. And you think if there was such a need for such building and development that they would have, crowded themselves out years ago. But somehow it remains, you know, it remains open, and you don't sense the same mad rush to develop and destroy the wild over there, you know, particularly England, Holland, Germany. You know, there is development to a degree, but just not this kind, you know.
That is correct. But
how do people feel about Americans in general? I mean,
well, in general. Most impressions we got from America are the American television series.
Which is another thing that always bothers me. You guys get American TV. We don't get any Dutch TV. We don't get any French TV. We don't get any Spanish TV, you know, with captions it would work. You know, do we seem especially close to you? Do we seem like we don't care what the rest of the world thinks?
Well, we don't have the money, I think, to make good programs on our own. And
you don't need money, though. You need some money, yeah. But you have artists, you have performers.
Okay, we have some artists, we have some performers, we have some money, but not enough to make every evening a special television evening or something like it. Mm-hmm. And so we copy a lot from Australia and the United States. And in general, most people have the only impression they have from the United States is that from the television. Or of everything you hear in the news, and
that's pretty scary, because when you look at TV, you listen to this, folks. These people judge us by what they see on TV.
Miami Vice, stuff like that.
Now, is your life equivalent to what is on TV to Three's Company or to the Brady Bunch or NBC News? Yeah. I mean, there's some reality in there sometimes, but. For the most part, it doesn't capture the whole picture. Yet that's, you see a very narrow view, I think, of what's really going on. And we don't see any view at all of most of the rest of the world, and we don't seem to care. You know, I always wonder about that. The people, my opinion, the people individually are much, much smarter than the mass media gives them credit for, than the mass government gives them credit for. They're both content to have people just watch, the popular programs and not demand a lot, not ask questions. But, you know, people have insights. And a lot of them are very, very good insights, but they're not encouraged to explore them. I think in Europe, you are encouraged a bit more. You know, there seems to be more diversity. The political system over there, how does it... popular elections, how does it work?
Yeah, well, you have... several parties, it's democratic, and you have also several elections for your city government, for your own city,
mm-hmm.
for your we call it provincie. That's one of the 11 pieces or 12 I think. Yeah,
well, it doesn't
one
really
of the 12 mean. Pieces. Yeah. They divided the Netherlands into originally 11 pieces, and but just a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
There came a new one, and So you have elections for that one, and you have also for the country and itself.
So who is the head of Holland? Who is the most important person?
Well, that's the minister president, the prime minister.
Uh-huh. And how is he elected?
How is he elected? Yeah. Well, his party, is it party or?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That party is also a party in having fun and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that,
that's
so.
True too.
Yeah, that's true too.
They
okay.
barely coincide.
they have parties too, but. Okay, the party is elected democratic,
mm-hmm.
and they have the majority, and together with another party, they, or several parties, they form, I think, the government. Yeah, my English or American words are not that political minded, so I'm not sure if I use the correct words here.
Yeah, so far you are.
Okay.
I'll let you know if you make a major mistake.
Okay, I'll keep you on that. And the party itself then elects the minister, the prime minister.
Mm.
And but the queen, we also have a queen. She must agree with the prime minister.
So the queen still has governmental powers to a degree.
Yeah, she has.
Interesting. Well. You know, we have a democratic system, popular election, but, you know, you have to wonder why so few people seem to take an interest. Why are there only two parties in the United States, you know? Why are there never really exciting races for the most important positions?
Yeah, we have about four major parties, but in total about 15 or 16.
Uh-huh. Well, that's something to think about. Differences in our culture, things that puzzle you. Is there anything that you can point to?
You mean about the American line?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the metric system, Fahrenheit, miles, gallons.
The metric system, that's right. Now, you and the rest of the world, this is something that has always puzzled me. The metric system, which seems to make a lot of sense, right now it's 21 degrees Celsius, and that converts to 70 on the Fahrenheit scale. You might wonder, you know, what those little numbers mean. 100 degrees Celsius is boiling. Okay, that's boiling water.
Boiling pure water. Yeah.
And 0 degrees Celsius is freezing.
Yeah.
That's where water becomes frozen. So everything is sort of between those two points, 0, 100. The Fahrenheit scale is 32 degrees Fahrenheit is freezing, 212 Fahrenheit is boiling. You also have meters and centimeters. How many centimeters are in a meter?
100.
It's 100.
Yeah.
How many inches are in a foot?
I don't know.
See? It doesn't make any sense. You know, there's 12. But why? Why 12? You know? It's 100 is a nice round number. You know, what's the meaning behind it? We've got yards. There's 3 feet in a yard. You know, it's kind of crazy. I like it for that. But as far as making sense for the rest of the world, it's bizarre. I don't know how it really got to this stage. I think we are the only country left that still uses this archaic system. And we don't really seem to be moving towards converting to the metric system. But you're puzzled by that, I guess.
Yeah, a little.
It doesn't make any sense when you come over. What other things strike you as odd or different?
Tax is not included here.
Tax is not included?
Yeah, if we buy something in the Netherlands and there's a price on it, and we buy the product and exact for the price
right.
where it was priced for. The first time I went to New York, I saw something at, let's say, $10.
Uh-huh.
And the guy was charging me more than $10.
So you thought he was trying to rip you off?
Yeah, I thought he must have noticed that I'm a tourist, and that's why he's ripping me off.
Uh-huh.
So, he explained to me, well, we have taxes and stuff like that, and the first time I don't really believe him, but I went to the second store and the third store, and
uh-huh.
they all did the same thing. I said, I thought, well, must be legal.
It's legal, I don't know if it's moral, but it's legal. And there's some things that we don't tax. We don't tax food. We don't tax newspapers. Although some states do tax newspapers. You know, you go and you expect to pay a quarter, and you end up paying 27 cents, and it's kind of silly, but that's the way it works. There's that custom as well. What do you think of the general attitude of Americans? They seem like a friendly bunch of people.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're good. Oh, okay. In general.
Well, now, I want to offer our listeners a chance to be some of these listeners, some of these Americans, excuse me, and ask Paul questions about Holland.
Netherlands. Well, why does your country have two names? A lot of people ask me that. The Holland and the Netherlands.
Yeah. The Netherlands, officially, long time ago, it was also Belgium was included, and Luxembourg, and the three countries.
So the Netherlands included three countries.
Yeah, it's not, because Holland, the way it is now, wasn't existing at that moment. Belgium was, used to be a part of the Netherlands, a part of the Netherlands, also was Luxembourg.
Right.
But Luxembourg itself was a private property from the Belgian king, I thought. Belgium wasn't existing at this moment. It was real strange, but private property of the king and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And but now Holland kept the name the Netherlands, and the Netherlands are still Holland.
Okay, well, now I want to get up the phone number 632-6901 because I'd like Long Islanders to say something and become a part of this because there's always people wandering around wanting to learn, you know, about our culture, and I think we should learn something about other people's culture. And it's a lot of fun, it really is, because I did it last summer, wandering around Europe. Now these folks are here wandering around this country. Any suggestions? What should they see? What should they do? What typifies New York, Long Island, United States? I've been trying to show them, interesting things, but maybe I missed something. 632-6901. Good evening. Hello? Is anyone there?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah. Hold on a second. This thing's broken again.
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay. Let's try it again. Good evening.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Listen, this is Iceman.
Iceman?
Yeah.
Well, are you coming or not?
listen, this is where he should go, okay?
Okay. In fact, I've already taken him to the East Village. You'll be proud of that. That's where we had our car broken into, in fact. We went to a pizza place at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's culture, right?
No, well, real culture is going down off I forgot the name of the pizza place, but it's directly off of St. Mark's.
That's the place we went to. Ricardo, I can't believe you know the place we went to. St. Mark's Pizza, right?
Pay like $13 a slice.
Oh, it's worth it, though. You know, that's New York pizza.
Yeah, that's it.
Didn't I tell you this was a good pizza place? Everybody knows about it.
Yeah, you go down and it's like a lot of places in New York are good to go to. It's like, but it's just like too many trendy places. Like a lot of people tell you to go to Metropolitan.
Uh huh. Yeah. You know, I never go to these museums. I mean, yeah, they're nice, but
boring.
Boring, right? And when I went to Europe, I didn't go to museums either. I sort of hung out. You know, I found more excitement in a laundromat in Europe than I could in a museum.
I mean, you know, you want to have some fun, go down to the Bowery. Go to CBGB's on a Sunday. Go see a show, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, hang out. You got to, you know, have some fun. Don't follow the quote-unquote line of sightseeing that everyone does, you know, like hopping on the tour bus. They'll take you. It's boring.
Circle line, stuff like that.
You should do something different because people go and say, oh, see this. You know, it's like a checklist, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Chevy Chase in European Vacation. He walked through Italy with a checklist, checking off everything he saw.
Right.
Do that, you know. It's boring. Go through New York, you know, just and hang out, you know.
Have you ever been overseas, sir?
Excuse me.
Have you ever been overseas?
Yeah, I have.
And have you enjoyed yourself? Have you followed those rules when you went overseas?
Hell no.
No. Oh, come on! Don't disappoint me here.
No, I never went through a checklist. I went over to England.
Uh huh. What'd you do?
I went with some friends two years ago. He was in England, and I went with him because he has family there. And it's like, you know, everyone's like, oh, yeah, you know, Big Ben, Parliament. No, we just, you know, we went around, we hung around on the East End.
Uh-huh.
You know, walked around, hung around with the punks and, you know.
So basically you lived in England, right?
Yeah, it was great.
That's what it's all about, you know. You live somewhere, you don't become a tourist. I'd suggest you listen to this guy, Paul, because that's what it's all about, you know.
Go out, man. Have some fun. Meet the women. You know what I'm saying?
Meet the women, yes. Well,
how many?
Perhaps some women can call up and
just one word of advice, Paul. Go to New York, make sure you can tell the women from the men.
Well, yeah, I believe it's Grandmaster Flash who said you can't tell the women from the men sometimes.
That's really hard.
Sugar and spice and everything nice, but when you get them home, ain't no telling what you find. Well, that's just his reflection.
Well, I'm working really hard at Mike's place, so I can get back to work.
Okay, Mike's place, huh? Out in Middle Island?
Yep.
Okay, well, you guys keep it up there. And you've got two satellite dishes now, I notice.
Excuse me?
You have two satellite dishes, I notice.
Yep, that's it.
Wow, well...
Come down here. You want to show him some culture. Come down.
Okay, well, maybe we'll bring him by there. All right, thanks very much for calling.
Take it easy.
Our number is 632-6901, if you have any words of advice for our Dutch visitor. And questions about Europe, questions about, other parts of the world, or just comments on anything going on in your life or other people's lives that you'd like to spread around. 632-6901. And let's get those calls coming in now, because usually the calls pour in at midnight, and that's when we've got to get out of here, because we're only on till midnight. So I want to see a lit switchboard here. We have five open lines, 632-6901. And rather sad note in the paper yesterday about how do you pronounce this, Citroën?
Citroën.
Well, I can't say that. Citroën. I'll just say that. That's probably as close as I can get. It's one of the world's oldest and oddest cars, and it's scheduled to go out of production forever later this summer after 42 years. Now, I'm sure people around here have seen those cars. They look sort of like Volkswagens, sort of like Volkswagen Bugs, but they're not. They're different. And they're made out of plastic or something? I mean, the windows are... They're different.
The windows are plastic, yeah.
The windows are plastic, right? They're not glass. They fold down.
Yeah. But it's a very good car. If you make a turn real fast, you can't get a car on the side. It's not possible.
It's not possible to flip over?
No.
You've tried?
I've seen trying. I've people seen trying, yeah.
Well, it's one of those distinctly European cars. And, there's one that drives around Stony Brook. I've seen it. If you're listening, call up. But... I've seen a Citroën around Stony Brook, the 2CV. It's distinctive for its bug-like shape and infamous for its ox-cart slow performance. It's French design. It's developed a cult following over the years. Like the Volkswagen Beetle, it is more lovable to some for its ugliness and its quirkiness. It's a small front-wheel drive car, 7 inches shorter than the Honda Civic hatchback. The 2CV was considered a marvel of engineering simplicity when it went on sale in 1948, perfect for the French farmer and city worker struggling to recover after World War II. The 2CV is legendary for its reliability. Listen to this. One story, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what they say. One story tells of a driver who ran out of transmission oil on the Chilean desert and got his 2CV going again by filling the gearbox with mashed bananas. And another version of that story has the bananas replacing depleted engine oil in Bolivia. So I don't know what's in bananas, but I wouldn't suggest trying that on your car. The 2CV's name stands for Deux Chevaux, two horses, which refers to a two-horsepower rating that was calculated strictly for tax purposes, but wasn't a true measure of its power. The original version's 375 cubic centimeter motor actually produced 9 horsepower, the two-cylinder air-cooled engine has been souped up over the years, and the current model 602cc engine produces 29 horsepower. The car sells now for the equivalent of about $7,000. And it's been offered in the United States in the 1950s and 60s, and although millions have been sold elsewhere in the world, the car never caught on with Americans. It's one of those things, like the metric system. Michael Cox, who publishes a newsletter in Boston for Citroën owners, estimates there are about 1,500 on the road in the U.S. Robert Monteleone, a Dodge salesman in Brooklyn, owns two 2CVs. He says they will do 70 miles an hour, but he adds it depends how big a hill you're on and how strong of a wind you have behind you. Now, the early cars, 2CVs, had to be started with a pull rope like a lawnmower. Their seats were canvas hammocks that could be removed and used for picnics. And the single windshield wiper only worked when the car was moving because it was powered by the speedometer cable. And over the years, the 2CV has been manufactured in France, England, Belgium, and Argentina. Amid declining sales, production is to cease this summer at the last factory producing them in Portugal. And the 2CV has been improved over the years, but Motor Trend magazine still found plenty to chuckle over when it tested the 1985 model. Its handling characteristics, said the magazine, made the car difficult to drive because the driver is laughing so hard. Is that true? Have you ever been in a Citroen? Obviously,
yeah,
they're very common in Holland, right?
Yeah. They're quite common. More than 1,500, I think.
I mean, they don't make people laugh that much, do they?
Well, you can laugh. You should try it.
It's good to laugh when you're driving, I always say. There's lots of things to laugh at.
We laugh also when you're driving. Well, so.
What do you think of driving in Manhattan or United States?
I'd like to try. You borrow me your car?
Well, I don't know, you know. But the attitude of the drivers, do you think it's any different? Do people make those gestures over there, too?
It's more chaotic than Paris, and certainly more chaotic than Amsterdam.
More what?
Than Amsterdam. Not regular. Everyone through each other.
Every man for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. More chaotic, I guess, is the word.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense, especially in New York. But New York is not really a true test of drivers in this country. In fact, you'll find most things in New York are not true of the rest of the country at all, which I think is good. I think there should be a lot of diversity around here. 632-6901, where is everybody tonight? I mean, what's going on, you know? The fireworks are tomorrow night. We're going to go over to the fireworks at Smith Haven Mall. We were in a mall today. Tell them about the mall. I was in a mall for longer than I think I've ever been in a mall before, showing, you know, these Dutch folks what a mall is all about. Now, did I succeed? Do you understand what the mall concept is now?
We saw the mall, and we got your point, so...
You don't have malls over there, do you? Not like that.
We have malls, but not that big, I think. Yeah, but we have malls.
Uh-huh.
What's the ringing all the time?
Oh, it's the our phone system here makes a ringing noise over the air. Yeah, I guess people can hear that. Let's go to a call. But I implore people, the lines are open, 632-6901, and Paul is here from Holland to take your calls. And I'm here as I'm here every week. So let's see who's out there. Let's not slight these folks here and prove to them that we are eager to welcome them with open arms. If I was on a Dutch radio station right now, the phone calls would be through the roof, right? Hundreds of calls. It's incredible. There, that got in another call. Now we have two more lines open. So let's get a bingo. Let's get everybody on there. 632-6901. You ever have a question you want to know about, you know, another culture, about Europe? You're thinking of going to Europe. You want to know what it's like, or advice on what to do while Paul is in the United States, because you know he's open to anything. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm just going to lower my radio, sir.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, you're talking about Europe?
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been to Europe. I've been to Italy.
Okay.
All right.
When did you go?
I went in 1967.
Well, that's quite a while ago. Is that the last time you went?
Yeah, but I remember it very, I remembered, like I remember yesterday.
Uh-huh.
It was really a beautiful country.
How long did you go?
I went there for about 3 weeks. We stopped off, I went to Rome,
mm-hmm.
a place called San Giovanni Rotondo, and Sicily, which was the birthplace of my father. And it was really, really nice to see, you know, the birthplace, you know?
Uh-huh. You felt a real link with the past, I guess.
Yeah. And then in San Giovanni Rotondo, we met this priest. I don't know if you ever heard of the priest, Padre Pio?
No,
I haven't either.
This was a Franciscan monk who bore the wounds of Christ. He had the stigmata.
Okay.
So that was really interesting, you know.
So why don't you go back? Why don't you go again?
I'm planning on going back there next year.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to save up some money.
Uh-huh. Well, that's... I suggest seeing more of Europe, too.
Yes, sir?
I suggest seeing more of Europe, you know, wandering around, take some time and take trains, things like that. You know, I think the mistake that people make is planning things out too much. You know, you should be free to be able to just sort of take 2 weeks. I know a lot of us aren't free to do that, but, you know, you can do it if you really want to. Let's put it that way. You can take 2 weeks and just sort of disappear and wander about a bit.
What I found really interesting in Italy was the double-decker buses.
Yeah.
Which they still had in 1967.
Really?
And they also had trolley cars.
What are trolley cars?
trolley cars, you know,
I thought you said trolley cars. Okay, trolley cars.
Yeah. And also to get to, a lot of the trains would go onto boats.
Really?
Yeah, this train, I think in Naples or something like that, we stopped off there and we took this train. Now the trains, I don't know if any of you people might remember the old Petticoat Junction train.
I've seen it, but,
Well, those trains,
uh-huh.
The trains they had there were like the Petticoat Junction trains.
That's incredible.
Now this was, they probably got better over the years. You know,
oh yeah, I'm sure they
with the old trains.
But if you got
to like looking at these trains, it was like looking at the 1800s.
Uh huh. If you go to Eastern Europe, I think you'll still find some of those trains wandering around.
Yeah, you know the thing is, they still use them up. You know, they're still using, you know, the old things. They're not modernizing.
Uh huh.
Sometimes I think that's a little bit better. Like you know, the newer cars with the fuel injection.
Uh huh.
That is like really garbage. You know what I mean?
Sometimes the old ways are better than the new ways.
Yeah,
I think
because with the carburetor, with the way the cars were,
uh-huh.
Back in the 70s, they were so easy to fix.
Uh-huh.
Like, my car, I'm having a problem with it. I have a 1982 Buick Skylark, right?
Uh-huh.
And it stalls out intermittently. And I've been bringing to the shop, they put it in, they hooked it up to some kind of machine to test the colds, right?
Right.
And they said, there's nothing wrong, but I said, but it's still stalling out. And they said, I'm sorry, and then they charged me like $64.
Oh, that's a going rate to tell you that nothing's wrong, I guess.
Yeah, and I was like really pissed off.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you mentioned, the old ways and the new ways. Nowhere more so than Europe, I think, where you find the mixing of the old and the new, you know. I've mentioned this before. You go to a pub in England, and old people are there with young people. You don't see that here. You know, there's a lot more, you know, the old people go to the old folks' home, and we forget about them there, you know. But in other countries, people do things differently. They relate in different ways, and I think we can learn a lot from that.
Learn a lot from an old fellow.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. Most definitely. Listen, sir, thanks very much for calling.
But with that car.
Yeah.
But my car. Now, then I brought it to another shop where they thought it was something, there's a device on it, it was looked like a diaphragm, right?
Uh-huh.
And he changed that. He said, oh, this is it. And, you know what I mean, it wasn't it. And and it's still stalling out.
Well, you know, it's what year is this car?
1982.
Well, I can't say it's a very old car, but take it back to the dealer.
I brought it back to one of the dealers, and they're the ones who hooked it up to the computer and charged me $64.
Oh, they're the ones that did that, huh? Then you got to write letters. That's what you got to do. Write letters to their main office and tell them that you're very dissatisfied, and call radio talk shows. That does a lot.
You know, but the thing is, I would suggest if any person wants to buy a new car,
uh-huh.
Don't
buy a new car.
Get a car from like the 70s before they put the fuel injection and all that garbage.
Well, get a car from the 60s for that matter.
Exactly, because they're easier to fix, and like when it had points, they could easily diagnose something. Now they can't diagnose anything for beams.
Uh huh. Well, I imagine you'll be seeing some of the last Citroens running around, so maybe you want to get one of those. At least they're a status symbol in your neighborhood.
What is a Citroen?
Those are the cars that look sort of like Volkswagens. They're European.
Oh, the Volkswagen Beetle.
But it's not a Volkswagen. This is a completely different car, and it's the back slopes down a lot more sharply. And it's a real relic in its time, but they're not going to make them after this summer. This is the last time they're going to make them. If you go to Europe, you see those cars everywhere.
But it probably has fuel injection, right?
I don't think so. I don't think they have fuel injection in those cars.
Because the United States law is all new cars have to have the fuel injection.
Well, how about cars that are made in another country and somebody brings them in?
I'm not sure about that, but I think, you know what I mean, the government wants to stop the anti-pollution, but once the government got into this, they made, You know who got screwed?
Who?
Mall guys, us, because we have to pay out so much more to find out, to get this and that fixed. It's costing the consumers more.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's always the small guys who get it, but I wish you luck with your car escapades and hope things work out in the future. Thanks very much for calling. Our number is 632-6901, and, you know, it's interesting talking about cars, but we should be talking about Europe and other things going on here. I mean, the Citroëns are European cars, and we're about to see the end of them. That's really sad. I think it's sad. I hope they get one of those one day. They have very thin tires, don't they? Tires seem to be very, like bicycle tires almost.
Yeah,
that's true. The windows, as we said, fold down. Windshield wipers are really tiny. And, boy, they're unique cars. But those other cars, the ones in, what are the ones that East Germans are known for? The East German cars, what are they again?
The Trabant?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. That's it. I want one of those, too. Yeah. Now, each one of those cars supposedly emits 10 times the amount of pollution as an American car.
Could be. And what's also special about the windows on the Deux Chevaux is that you fold it up. It's not of glass. It's just small plastic. So you take it together and...
So it just folds on top of itself.
Yeah, right.
What ingenuity, you know? It's incredible how there's that particular way of doing things. Oh, well. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello, Eric. How are you doing?
Okay, how are you? Who's this?
Good. This is Dwayne. What's my last name?
What's your last name, Dwayne?
What's my last name? Dwayne Julian something.
You know, you sound really familiar, and I can't place you.
Westbrook.
Okay, well, now, what can I do for you?
Well, I would like to ask your guest...
Yep.
Sorry, I'm on the train right now. I would like to ask your guest what his feelings are about the unification of Germany and how it's going to affect him... And how the people in this country feel about it?
In my country,
sounds
or
like a 1201. But go ahead. Okay. I imagine in your country and the rest of Europe as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's a good deal, a very good deal. But for Europe itself, it will mean a lot of differences. But there are a lot of speculations which I. Well, it's positive or it's negative, or it's not sure which way it will go. Oops, what's that?
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Keep going.
Right. Okay. So, you want to hear my opinion, or?
Yeah, I just want you because I don't know what the consciousness of the rest of Europe is and how it affects them. I only see what the American media is making out of all of it.
Right. We don't see what the other views are, so this is a perfect opportunity to hear another view. I'm just going to turn you down a little bit while someone on the train is blowing a flute there. So,
well, I don't really know what the American view on this operation is.
Well, you know, there really isn't all that much of a view. We're just sort of watching it, but I don't think very many people understand what's happening over there. I mean, not only are we seeing Germany unify, but we're seeing the economic union of Europe in 2 years. Yeah. I mean, those two things, that's going to change. I mean, the Soviet Union is not going to be a massive power anymore, but Europe is a massive power.
Okay, but I don't think very few German people understand what's going on. It's all going so quickly and so fast, and the Germans itself and are not able to see... Well, what is it gonna mean for us, and how far is it going to have an influence on our lives? And as far as the economic unification of Europe concerned, well, I think most of the Europeans don't know what it's gonna bring, or even if it's gonna work, yes or no.
Did that answer your question, caller?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, we wish you a pleasant ride on your train.
On the train.
Where is you're going? I hope you get there.
I had another question.
Okay, what's your other question?
What is the perception on the part of the part of Europe he comes from about Russia now?
Good question. The Soviet Union, how did you view the Soviet Union in the height of the Cold War, and has that changed now?
Well, I always had some kind of respect for the Soviet Union. Why? Well, especially when the changes began. I have an enormous respect for Gorbachev, the person. Well, of course, I base my opinion on the information I get, and the information I get from Russia is nothing more than the
party line,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, people in Europe often see saw America and Russia as the two big countries, and if there should come a World War III, those were the two which were going to start it. And what I learned about America and what I learned about the Soviet Union, then I liked, in some kind of respect, the Soviet Union more. I don't want to live there. I'm not going to work
there. But why? What about the Soviet Union would you like more? You know, what is it that makes them seem more favorable in that particular instance?
Well, it's of course not completely true, but I think they have more the spirit of one of being all together. What's the noise?
I imagine that they have the guitarist on the train. They have those sometimes.
Okay.
But
strange train.
Yeah, it's a strange train, all right.
I want to see
a long strange train indeed.
How do I put it in English? It's more some kind of feeling I have, and it's when I see the steps to peace or something, which Gorbachev has taken or has tried to take, I think there are more more worth than what the Americans did.
Uh-huh. I guess what you're saying is they have more of a sense of history, more that they've been active participants a lot more in what is actually, like World War II, for instance, how many Soviets actually died on their own ground? A lot. But the United States has never been invaded by a foreign country, so they've been through a lot more hardship, obviously. Mm. And I guess you have to respect that to a degree. And, you know, I never really thought the Soviets were out to nuke us and to destroy us. And apparently now that has been proven to be true. The Soviets are much more concerned with what's going on in their own homeland, which right now is quite chaotic. So I guess that pretty much covers that topic. Sir, on the train, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, can I ask one more, or is it too many?
You can ask one more. May I ask, where are you going on the train?
Where am I going?
Yeah.
Excuse me, where's the train going right now? Barksdale. I'm going to Barksdale.
Okay, well, give us a call when you get there, too. But one more, what do you call it, question.
Okay, I've been to Europe several times, and just my impression of it, it seems, besides France and England, most of the other countries don't seem to have the racial problems, and they seem to be homogeneous societies where everybody seems to be of the same thought of mind and not so many problems, except for in the college student ranks. You know, I notice there's a lot of protesting going on, but is that how it really is? Is my perception correct? Is it really a harmonious type situation in these countries, or is there, like, trouble brewing that we just don't hear about?
Well, can I just ask you a question? You said you don't see racial problems there, and then you said everybody's of the same mindset. Don't you see that as being a racial problem, if that's true?
What do you mean?
Well, you said there's no racial problem because everybody is the same. And don't you think a case where everybody is the same is a big racial problem?
No. I mean, I'm talking about tensions between different groups of people.
Right.
You know, in terms of that.
Okay.
Not necessarily racial or anything like that. It just seems that everybody, you know, there just doesn't seem to be as much conflict and things like that going on, whereas in our country that seems to be happening all the time.
And in England, you hear about it all the time. But, you know, I just don't seem to see it. When I traveled throughout Europe, I didn't see it in other places.
Okay, but what did you see? We also have problems about, or discussions about, let's say, abortion or something. It's a hot item here, too.
Right.
But
we never hear about stuff like that.
You never hear about the discussion in Europe about it?
No, not really.
Oh, okay, yeah, then that's a problem of yours.
What source would we have for that? We have no source. You know, we don't see news from Europe. You get CNN, right?
Yeah, we get
in your
CNN.
Apartment in Amsterdam, this guy gets CNN. I can't get CNN in my own house, but that's something else. We don't get any European news here. You know, you turn on the shortwave, you might hear something, but you really don't get any. And what's worse is there doesn't seem to be that much of an interest in what's going on in the rest of the world.
No, but we have problems, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
I can attest to that. They do have problems.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thanks very much for calling, and hopefully we'll hear from you later.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, I hate to call twice.
Yeah, I hate it when you call twice, too, but...
I hope I got enough time to straighten this guy out with the car problem. I might be able to help him out.
Well, okay, he's not on the line right now, but very quickly.
He's got a pen handy. I'll give him an address when I'm done talking, because I had a problem, but the thing is, he shouldn't make statements like he's making, because he's ignorant of how the system works. If he took the time to study fuel injection, he would understand...
Yeah, but sir, not all of us can study fuel injection. You know, a lot of people don't have the mind for that kind of thing. You know, I tried changing my windshield wiper blade this week, and it took me 3 days.
Well,
and I needed help. I couldn't do it. There's just no way. Some people just don't have the knack for car kind of things.
Okay, but the thing is, he shouldn't be talking down fuel injection, because that's what's helping to straighten out the air in this country. You got a computer in there that controls the fuel flow through the injectors. Via an oxygen sensor that controls the fuel injectors. The oxygen sensor sends a message to the computer how much fuel the engine needs to run efficiently. That system is beautiful if it's working right. When you have a problem like he's got, all right, I can understand his heartache. He probably has a bad connection or something somewhere, or a little glitch, and the technicians can't find it. I know what's going on. But without these systems, our air would be as bad as it is. From what I understand, Europe has a real problem with air pollution because they don't have the regulations that we have here.
Particularly Eastern Europe, we're just finding out some of the horrible things going on in there.
Carburetor, you can play around with it, and your engine can run so rich, it's just dumping raw fuel into the atmosphere. When you've got a system like he's got in his car and it's working right, you got a nice exhaust. It's not a heavy pollutant.
Well, okay, you're right. I mean, obviously things are here for a very important reason. But, sir, we're out of time. Did you have any final thing you wanted to tell that person?
Got that pen handy. Have him write. I can't give the name because the guy that helped me, I had a carburetor problem on an 81 that's computer controlled before they went to fuel injection. I think he has throttle body injection because he has an 82.
Sir, just give out the information quickly.
Okay.